This is Taking Care in Business, a podcast that dives into the topic of corporate social responsibility from many different perspectives. Host Vicki Bolson is the founder and CEO of Bolson Group, a unified marketing company located in Indianapolis. Bolson Group is the first B Corp certified company in Indiana, but Vicki understands that you don't have to be certified in corporate social responsibility in order to use business as a force for good. Join Vicki as she talks about why it's always worthwhile to take care in business.
Hey Sawyer, how's it going today?
Oh, it's going great. How are you?
I am good. I am pretty excited that we have somebody joining us all the way from India today.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
It's kind of wild. It's I had a family member travel to India a couple years ago, and I thought it was so weird how it was a 10 and a half hour time difference. Yeah, not 11, not 12 hours, but 10 and a half hours. So just a little bizarre. But anyway, I'm going to get right into it because I was really moved by this pitch that we got from someone from the company where our guest works, talking about the story of Sandeep Agarwal. And I immediately, of course, you know, Googled him and just thought, I've got to talk to this man. I mean, to me, he kind of reminds me of like the Jeff Bezos of India. I can't wait to ask him if he can relate to that and if he hears that. But I mean, this is a man whose life has been filled with ups and downs, and without resiliency and perseverance and tenacity, you know, he wouldn't be able to be talking to us right now. I mean, he has had, you know, challenges from the time he was young up until, you know, today, but he has just made what seems to be an amazing life for himself. He has two of the biggest companies in India. They're called Droom and ShopClues. Both are billion-dollar companies. He used to be a Wall Street superstar and then moved back to India he started one of his companies in, I think, California, and then moved back to India and started the second one. So it's just a super cool story. And he's open about it. He wrote a book called Fall Again, Rise Again, which I know I would love because you all know how much I love memoirs. I'm totally going to read it to hear about his entire journey. So welcome, Sandeep. I see you there. Hello.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you, Swear. Very good to see you guys.
Yeah. So, okay. I have to start off by asking, have you been compared to Jeff Bezos before?
Well, I was almost blushing hearing my elaborate introduction. You have been very kind with your words, but yes, it's amazing. As a student, I landed in US, saw Jeff Bezos as a big hero, as a Wall Street analyst, covered his company, wrote reports about Amazon. And when I moved back to India roughly 10 years back, absolutely many times people would compare me to Jeff Bezos. And my reaction would be, I hope God give me even 100th of what he has done or the impact he has made. I will feel that I was very lucky.
Yeah, well, the type of companies that you have are even similar to, you know, his journey. Tell us just a little bit about what ShopClues does and what Droom does for the community in India.
Sure, absolutely. So Vicki, I came to India roughly 10 years back. In fact, next month, I will complete 10 years in India. And although I grew up in India, but I did not spend majority of my adult life in India. I was in St. Louis in Midwest, then next 15 years in San Francisco and Seattle. But in 2011, I came to India to start ShopClues.com. Which, as you mentioned in my introduction also, it's like almost like Amazon or Alibaba for India. When I started ShopClues, there were 35 small, medium-sized e-commerce company. They all bought inventory and then sold them online. I created India's first ever managed marketplace. And I was, before that, I was a Wall Street analyst based out of Silicon Valley. So this company basically was the first e-commerce marketplace at a time when e-commerce was 17-year-old in US, but practically almost new in India. And all other companies were just kept a lot of inventory. We did very well. Within fourth year of operation, we became a billion-dollar company. And for that time, it was a fourth ever unicorn made by our new generation tech entrepreneur in India. And it was the least amount of time and least amount of capital to reach $1 billion. So I'm very proud of that. And then we can talk about it. My life experienced some unanticipated movement, which we can talk in a subsequent conversation, but sticking to the company, the second company I started is called Droom, which is D-R-O-O-M, which is Dutch for dream. It is actually India's largest online marketplace for buying and selling of used and new automobiles. So maybe you can say maybe a little, but more internet rather than we don't have physical stores. But you can say maybe like what will happen if CarMax or Carvana are 100% online. So that's what, and it's a very large company. In the fourth year of its operation, it became a billion-dollar company. And if the God is kind and everything goes fine, in next year or so, the company should be listed most likely in a stock exchange in US or maybe in here in Mumbai.
Yeah, it's like you're taking India into the 20th century with these two companies. I thought Droom might have been a play off of room. So I love it that it's Dutch for dream, but it also kind of has that little,
Actually, thing is, when I started Droom, that time the Vroom, which is also an automobile company in US, actually, it was not at all familiar. In fact, I must admit, with all my honesty, I did not know about Vroom. But only thing is, when I was looking for a name, I never got a name Vroom. And for me, it was basically, how I came up with the name was very simple. Engine make a sound Vroom, which you just made it. And buying automobile is a dream come true. So I kind of combined engine sound with a dream come true. And that's how Droom came. And then one day I was traveling and a person sitting next to me was a Dutch person. And he said, what do you do? I said, I founded this company called Droom. And he said, so how long do you know Dutch? I said, what do you mean? I have no idea what is like. I only know English. I know Hindi and one or two more languages. And he said, your company means dream in Dutch. And so that day was it. So I'm sounding smarter than I am, but it was a pure accident. I just combined it, Droom and Dream.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? Oh, that's so wild. That's serendipitous, isn't it?
So you know, and with all due respect to Droom, until I become bigger than them, I will not be able to sleep properly because now they are a public company. And I don't want to be called as Vroom Wannabe, that's almost similar name. So Vicky, I'm working extra hard to make sure we go public and became, quite large so that our name has no repercussion in terms of Wannabe company or something like that.
Yeah. No, it's super cool website too. I mean, you can literally, there's so many ways to narrow down on the particular car, motorcycle, or even airplane that you're looking for. It's very cool.
That's right. I mean, we sell everything from a bicycle to plane and anything in basically anything which has a wheel or motor human being used for transportation, you can find on Droom.
So cool. So I do want to talk about what you referred to about your circumstances or whatever that happened, which then led to you writing the book. But before we do that, because this is a podcast about corporate social responsibility, I want to talk about the fact that when I was doing some research, I found that your company, and I can't recall if it was Droom or ShopClues, but I think it was Droom, but you were named one of the best places to work in India. And also on your Glassdoor, have you heard of Glassdoor in the US? There's an equivalent in India. What's it called?
Actually, Glassdoor has a substantial presence in India also, and there are a couple of more kind of career portals. So.
Okay. Well, on those, I mean, people were just glowing about working for your companies. And so I think, I think that's that shows that, you know, you have created companies that care about workplace culture. And so I want to ask you, what does the word corporate social responsibility mean to you as a business owner? And then I want to also hear from the perspective of people who live and work in India,
right,
what kind of meaning do people put behind working for a company that is socially responsible?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think what it means for me is really, you know, do the right things, does not matter how lucky we are with our surrounded by good friends, loved ones, spouse, siblings, kids, parents. But, you know, the reality of the modern era is that one can end up spending majority of their adult life at work. So I always believe that wouldn't it be great, if the, you know, work inspires you, you feel that you are growing, you think you are working with, you are learning from others, you are making impact, you know, making money what you think you deserve. So, and then also, you know, beside, in addition to this, as a company, technology has grown very rapidly especially in last 2.5 decades. How can we, you know, as a company, what role can we play in our neighborhood, in our society, how we can make the world as a better place to live in? Can we be environment conscious? Can we be socially conscious? A lot of things I noticed, Vicky, in US, I was very fortunate to work with 3 Fortune 100 companies in their headquarters in the United States, including Charles Schwab, Microsoft, and Citi. So when I came to India, I mean, India did not have, a modern style white collar job environment for more than 25 years, right? So I was very, very keen on kind of bringing a company which stands for merit, which has an open door policy. There's no kind of discrimination. In US, a lot of these things are now, we take it for granted. They were enforced at some point of time by law, but there is no law for any of these things. But, you know, and we were right, but we wanted to, so, be good to the people, make sure they are set up for success. They can unleash their potential, and just don't be a silo driven company. Make sure you also have from environment to the social responsibility, you don't shy away. So I think those things are very, very important. I'm a tech entrepreneur and feel very blessed to create 2 hyper growth, large scalable companies. But I absolutely will not feel myself successful if the people working with me and the companies I have founded don't feel that, you know, they could not make the impact. I, in fact, feel very good when someone says the best work of my life I've done is at this company. So sorry for the long answer, but, you know, I feel that from people to the environment, to the neighborhood and society, you know, every business, every individual has their share of contribution. And that's how the world becomes better place to live in, better place to work, better place to for creativity, and better place to build careers. And how, at least the founder and the founder I am for the company, can I do my bit to have some impact from that?
Yeah, oh, that's so great. How do your employees and other business owners feel about this just sort of focus that you have on how you're going to build your company? Is it something that is foreign to them, or, you know, is it becoming more the norm in India, I guess?
Yeah, no. So Vicky, if you think about it, maybe for context, if we step back and look at in Silicon Valley, you know, in 1950s and 60s, you had a companies like Xerox or Hewlett Packard, right? Or maybe National Semiconductor, and then a lot of software and internet companies were coming. And for so many companies had a so cool culture that there are movies made on their culture. right? So when I came to India 10 years back and my first company, ShopGlues, you know, I truly wanted to create a Silicon Valley type of culture. Mm-hmm. So you know, like people, some people will find it too good to be true, right? I mean, you know, I sat on a workstation like any other workstation. I did not have a corner office with a leather chair, right? And you know, there's a Friday happy hour. I grab the same beer, same way as anyone else. I even sometimes showed my dance move to, you know, just everyone was like open door policy, very, very non-hierarchical. It was a ray of fresh air. Like, you know, that time even actually working with a startup was almost tabooed because in India, culturally, we did not reward failures, right? Failures were looked down upon. So people will choose very safe careers, being a doctor and a lawyer and an engineer, right? And they were like, you know, they were like handful of startup companies, and still those companies did not have this kind of culture. So absolutely, you know, it was like fantastic. I built that company right in the outskirts of New Delhi. Lot of people started gravitating. I had people coming to me and saying, I graduated from India's MIT, right? I'm about to like, I have a student loan. I have a lot of peer pressure. If I love this company, but I can't join, I'm going to join a 100-year-old bank. Because if I join a company, my future father-in-law is going to ask, where do you work? And what I'm going to tell him, a startup company, he's not going to give his daughter to me. So like, you know, this was literally like 10 years back. It was like culture like that.
Yeah.
You know, we kept on country, you know, we inspired many other companies. Our culture is definitely something we are very proud of. And I took our game only to the next level. And but Vicky, but also India's ecosystem has evolved. So now there are many more companies who have understood that, you know, this is not a time when you have, you know, some, you know, like a manufacturing unit and people come at 9 a.m. and leave by 5 p.m. You know, it's like, you know, it's our intellectual property based companies, and healthy body and healthy minds are required. So culture, actually culture should be something which creates creativity, which creates sense of ownership, sense of belonging, right? You feel that you can, you know, like you are, you know, you have butterflies in your stomach when thinking of coming to work. You rarely have a Monday blues, right? So I think I'm like, I definitely, you know, I think that is, so we did, it was very, very exotic. First 4 or 5 years, and you know, press will talk about it, TV will talk about it. We have India's leading TV channels coming and kind of hosting us for a day, creating a documentary out of that. And I don't want to steal all the credit. I have done my part, but you know, like gradually it all picked up. I would say, you know, it all started in Silicon Valley in 1950s, but I think it started in India 2010. So long way to go. But on the other hand, it's all picking up.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I'm glad that you pointed out, you know, the difference between 1950s in the United States and 2010 in India, because I can only imagine, and I bet it was just like everything you said about the father-in-law not wanting to allow his daughter to, you know, I can believe it, you know, and I bet it was just very exotic for you to come in and be starting and creating a company like that, not to mention you coming in with what happened in your career when you were in California. So let's talk about that, because you have been completely exonerated. But tell us a little bit about what in the world happened and how you dealt with all that.
Sure. So Vicky, I mean, just very quickly, I grew up in India in my mid-20s when the first dot-com boom was happening. I came to United States for my higher studies in St. Louis, right? And you know, I was very fascinated by dot-com and internet revolution, and felt quite frustrated being as a student spending money versus being in Silicon Valley and building a company, right? So I graduated from there, got a job with Charles Schwab.com 6 days before 9/11. And then, you know, from the time I started my job, next 2 years, my company literally let go 2/3 of the total employees. somehow I got lucky and survived there. Then I ended up joining Microsoft, came back to the 2 years there, then came to Wall Street. Wall Street was my long-held desire to be on Wall Street. And I must acknowledge I got probably three dozen rejection letters while doing my MBA. Every investment bank in US shortlisted me for an interview and everyone rejected me. But so I had this unmet desire after working with Schwab and Microsoft for 5 years. I finally got a very fantastic job as a junior internet analyst with Citigroup in San Francisco. So I moved back from Seattle, started working there on my way, built good name. I was a good analyst, ranked among the top internet analyst. I had no plan to, I thought I'll be doing this for next 20 years. Then I, you know, as I mentioned, you know, I saw an opportunity in India that, you know, e-commerce is a, you know, e-commerce going to bloom a lot. And I did not want to miss out that opportunity. So I left Wall Street, came to India. Now I'm building this company, right? I'm like the month, I would visit back to United States every 6 months because I had a green card, like a visa, which would expire if I would not visit there every 6 months. So I would visit every 6 months. The month, you know, for 3 years, I lived in uncertainty whether I'm making it big or not with ShopClues, and was it worth to come to India or not. The month I felt that I have arrived and it's just a matter of time, the company will be multi-billion dollar, it will be public. I was in US for that, my 6 month trip. And one day I'm coming back from a lunch from Cheesecake Factory. My cousin is driving the car, pulling his car in San Jose in his home. And he parks the car and literally like a Hollywood movie, multiple cars with FBI written on them come and surround my car as if we would like, so that we could not, we cannot even back up and run away. And then they asked, who is Sandeep Agarwal? And I said, I'm Sandeep Agarwal. And he said, sir, we have an arrest warrant and you are arrested. And I had two of my kids that time, 6-year-old, second one was 2-year-old, and my ex-wife, they all were sitting on a back seat. My cousin was on a driver's seat. I was in the front seat, right in front of my kids. They showed, you know, warrant to my ex-wife. My kids are like crying and they just basically arrest me, handcuff me, remove laces from my shoes so that I don't hurt someone or something. I don't know what was the reason. And then anyhow, I was taken to a facility. Next day morning, I was presented in front of a judge where I only heard public prosecutors were arguing that I should be put in jail. And he said, is he a threat to society? Is he going to run away? And they said, no. And he said, I'm going to give a bail. So I got a bail. And then I was asked to actually appear in front of a judge in New York. So all of a sudden, and when I next day morning, when I was coming to the court, I saw my ex-wife, her, she looked like 20 years older in one night, right? Her eyes were red. And she said, Sandeep, we are finished. You are all over the newspaper. Every newspaper carried that a famous Wall Street analyst got arrested in an insider trading case. So all of a sudden, Vicky, my life was gone. I like, you know, right from not being able to sleep to just what happened. It was very, very traumatic for me, for my family, for my kids, my parents back here in India and my entire company. And so I had to now deal with the regulators. I was there for 14 months and then they allowed me to come back. And that is when I had to step down from ShopClues, started Droom. But I think it's a power of United States institutions, which are simply world-class, and I'm not doing a lip service. While it took 7 years, but early last year, Department of Justice decided to dismiss and drop all charges against me, as you mentioned, fully exonerated. And they dismissed and dropped all charges as if they never occurred. And I had a civil settlement with the Security Exchange Commission, which is one of the regulatory agency if you work on Wall Street. And but for 7 years, I lived in a fear that when will I be called back? Will they put me in jail? Right. And I had to step down from the company, which I built from scratch to $1 billion. On the way, actually, also my marriage stopped working. I was married for 17 years, dated my wife, ex-wife that time for 3-4 years, it stopped working, and had an immense amount of collateral damage, right? I mean, you know, I had to start Droom in a backdrop of an outstanding high profile criminal case against me. So, you know, because I had a very good track record, a lot of people, still I was very lucky to attract some investors for Droom. But you imagine, how can you fund a founder who has a pending criminal and civil case against him, right? So I had a glass ceiling in spite of being so unique that I was the fourth Indian ever to create a billion-dollar company. So anyhow, I mean, I just, you know, my, you know, some of my, you know, I had a typical middle-class family upbringing, high values. So I just focused on my karma that, you know, a lot of things are not in my control, but I, you know, so I just focus on my work. And one thing led to another. On the way, I could not save my marriage, but on the work side, was able to create another billion-dollar company. Did have, you know, I must say, the kind of success I had previously and the kind of company I was building, I was not able to attract extremely large investors who loved me in the meeting, who loved everything knowing about Droom, but I also knew that they are not going to write the check because the elephant in the room was pending legal case against me. So anyhow, but the glass half full is, Vicky, I was able to raise in all those 7 years, $125 million. The company is multi-billion, hopefully will be an IPO less than 1 year. And as I mentioned, literally actually, Valentine's Day on 2020, I got a call from my lawyer in New York that the Department of Justice is dismissing all the charges.
That's the best Valentine's Day ever, right? So yes. I just, the strength that it would take to have just kept functioning through all that and to keep your head above water and be confident enough to still ask for people to invest in you. I mean, you would have to have a strength of your own character that is just so strong, because I think I would have, for at least a moment, crawled under a rock and wanted to just go away. I mean, but you knew that you had, you know, that the truth would come out, I guess. And that's how you just lived each day, right?
So Vicky, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound stronger than I am. So I did everything. I mean, I would hide, I would cover my face. I'll have a hard time sleeping. I was in trauma for 6-7 months. I am very, I don't want to sensationalize it, but my parents even suspected that what if he's going to kill himself, right? I had that kind of mental state. I mean, I lived in the United States for 15 years. I had probably one ticket for driving maybe 2 miles more than the permissible limit, right? And I had never been to court. I had never spoken to cops. I had never had to hire a lawyer, an attorney for anything. So I saw like my body changing, my soul changing, my mind changing. I had 2 kids to look after. I had a company which could go belly up versus becoming a multi-billion. So then it was a daytime in San Francisco where I had to live for next 14 months. I used to talk in the daytime with my lawyer or the regulators. And in the night, it used to be daytime, as we discussed that there is a 10 and a half hour difference. I would run my company, right? And I would be constantly sleep deprived. I could not see the light at another tunnel. I would literally wake up thinking that someone is there to arrest me and put me in a jail, right? And so it was all that. And I must say, I think I was in a bad state of mental health. But one day, I remember it was March, my incident happened in July 2013. And March 2014, I'm actually crashing for a few days with my elder sister who lives in Silicon Valley. And one day I woke up and I said, the worst thing human being can do is to be in a state of self-pity, right? And keep on pointing finger to yourself that why me, right? And the same, I had no money. Sometime I used to buy a $7 lunch, eat half during lunch, eat half as a dinner. So I woke up that day and I said, I must push back. And I actually went to a 24/7 gym, signed up there for membership, started working out. And I said, rather than living with elder sister and cousins, I'm going to take a place of my own. And then I said, you know, I was very tired that I don't know how long I'm going to be in US. So I decided to have a car. And I said, you know, like whatever it is, this is what God has decided for me. And that's how kind of I built. So anyhow, but, you know, like, you know, and now when I look back, yes, you know, I think God was very kind to steer me to the right direction. I was able to develop some strength, had resilience. And on the way, I must say, so many of my friends, I also feel, you know, at that time, I realized the power of relationship. Vicky, a lot of people did not just judge me based on that incident. And I was very fortunate for that. My pain, there was no way someone I could share with it. It had to be shared only by me. But so many of my friends, their own share of contribution. For example, a friend of mine, he never would let me stay in a hotel whenever I visited New York to meet Department of Justice. And he gave me his 12-year-old daughter who was already going through a preteen. And he said, "Dad, how can you give my room to someone else?" Right? And she will actually sleep with them. And so, you know, anyhow, so I've gone through all of this and something which I had seen only in movies and all, but, you know, one by one, one thing led to another, and it just worked out.
Well, Sandeep, thank you for sharing all that. I mean, I think the vulnerability of you being able to share is something that it's remarkable. Not everybody is that open and willing to share that the hardest time in your life, I'm sure, that then, like you said, had so much other collateral damage. Is all this documented in the Fall Again, Rise Again book, like the whole story?
So absolutely. Actually, thing is, Vicky, I grew up in a very simple, classic middle-class family background. I was youngest of the four siblings. My father worked for Government of India for 35 years, and I was the most pampered youngest one for my mom. So they took, but he would get transferred and will spend 3 years in every new city. And these were hardly a city, they were small villages. So by the time I came to United States, I was very shy. I hardly knew English. And unlike my peer group, even for that time and that era, I was way behind if you compare me in terms of my language proficiency to many other things. So, but when I came to India and I knew that Shopclues is becoming a $1 billion company, I really wanted to put that into paper and pencil so that it can inspire millions of other. India is a very young country, you know, average age is 27. And then I did not realize that it is not only that story. I mean, my story will have a lot of graphs, right? Yeah. And ups. So I authored a book which got released last year in October called Fall Again and Rise Again. It's available in Amazon in India and US. It's also available through Audible and Kindle. And it has remained for multiple months the best-selling book. I do not know how people feel, but from my side, I was as candid as I'm with you today, and that's who I am. So it's but I can say also it's an open book. So yes, that book is available, and I'm hoping it's doing its work and inspiring more.
Okay, well, I am going to read it absolutely, or listen to it on Audible, because I have so enjoyed hearing this story, and what I really like is that you have taken your pain and like the hope that you had to come out of this on the other side, you know, but not knowing for years and years what was going to happen. And despite all that, you have started a foundation. You know, I definitely want to touch on that, like how that came to be and what your foundation does.
Sure. So Vicky, this is called Sandeep Agarwal Foundation. And what happened, I was, however humble background I had, I have more things to count as my blessings in terms of the places where I went for study, places where I ended up working, and the companies I ended up making. and wealth I was able to create for myself and the employees of the companies and the investors. But, you know, when I came back to India, I realized that, you know, India is a very promising emerging market, but people are very, very poor here, right? And there are all sort of things which can really shake someone. So, you know, I thought, yeah, you know, beside doing whatever I'm doing here, how can I make a contribution? So I got associated with one organization, which would actually help, you know, all the married women who were not making any economic contribution to their family, probably had an abusive husband or unemployed husband or alcoholic husband, and they really wanted to make a difference in their family's life. They had some skill. They had a, you know, they were biologically no different than anyone else. So I got associated. So there was an organization who would train these uneducated poor women. They can make, you know, from their skills, like a wine bag, you know, wine bag, or a maybe a, you know, a, you know, some, so many other small things from some of the handicraft type of heritage which India had passed, and a lot of girls get trained from a childhood to know some of this stuff. So I started contributing to that organization a lot, including helping them to even have their own website and hosted, and then, you know, giving them a front page for their products which they wanted to sell on shopclose.com. And then, you know, I realized that a lot of time, you know, like, you know, the US does a great job in terms of charity and, you know, doing its own, you know, it's a much more evolved country from that perspective. So I noticed that, you know, there were many other causes I could support. So I started supporting a lot of kids who lost their parents, and they were very badly treated either with their family members or in a foster parenting, etc. So I started contributing there. And then, as I mentioned, you know, that one of the reasons why I wrote my book is because I saw that while there was a time when nobody wanted to join a startup, to now in India, almost everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. And so I was able to lend myself in terms of guiding entrepreneur. You know, in US, you have a Shark Tank and many other programs. So I actually collaborated with MTV.
And I read this.
So I collaborated with MTV, and you know, this was not done to pat my back and look handsome and cool on TV. This was my way of giving back to the society with whatever I knew. And that was a, you know, there was a, you know, they created, we created a property called MTV Dropout, and you know, like a little bit similar to Shark Tank. And, you know, so that, and then, you know, many other, you know, autism and many other things, which, you know, were not that prevalent in India. The India I left when I went to United States, but when I came back, I had a much higher sensitivity. So I supported so many of these causes. So it's now a formal organizations. We do a lot of things, you know, for, I would say, underprivileged kids, underprivileged women, and, you know, encouraging entrepreneurship. And we take, you know, a couple of more causes at a company level. But that is kind of, you know, my way of kind of giving back to the society and making some difference.
Wow. I was so nervous doing this interview with you because I just felt like you had so many wonderful things that you've done. And you're the Jeff Bezos of India. I mean, who wouldn't be nervous to talk to someone like that? But you have just been such a delight, and just so, it's like talking to a friend or something. You're just so open and sensitive to everyone in every walk of life, despite the fact that you could have been bitter and, you know, not felt to give back because you've been wronged. So I just really, really think you are awesome. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast and just sharing your story. And for others who want to read more, they can get the book. Why don't you tell everybody the website addresses for Shop Clues, Droom, how to reach you, anything that you can give out?
First of all, Vicky and Swear, thank you for having me. I also found two new friends in you and enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for having me. In terms of, you know, I have not been running ShopClues for almost 6-7 years, but it is called ShopClues.com. And Droom is DROOM, but with a .in, which is us, you know, like not .com. So Droom.in. I also have my own personal website, SandeepAgarwal.com, which is my full name.com. And then, you know, yes, I mean, the book is available. And, you know, but thank you for having me. I absolutely enjoyed this whole conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. You have a great, go home and get some sleep because it's late there in India.
Like it's almost 8:30, so, but stay
got a little bit of time. You got to go do those dance moves that you talked about.
That's right.
Bye.
Good talking to you, Vicky and Sawyer. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too.
I just want to thank Sawyer Benj, our producer, and our show sponsors, Selflessly and Charge. If you'd like to nominate someone for Taking Care in Community, you can visit our website, takingcareinbusiness.com, or email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, or download Taking Care in Business wherever you get your podcasts. If you love Taking Care in Business, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review or share this episode on your social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Taking Care in Biz. That's Taking Care in Biz, B-I-Z. If you have questions or comments, you can also email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to our sponsors, Selflessly in Charge. And until next time, take care in business.